This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The International Organization for Migration reports efforts are ongoing to rescue around 200 migrants from Somalia and Ethiopia who have been kidnapped in Libya and are being held for ransom.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, we'll look at the increasingly growing number of unaccompanied migrant children entering Europe. Lesotho's new prime minister is sworn in today, 2 days after his estranged wife was shot dead and 3 years after he fled the country fearing he might be assassinated. And millions of people in southern Ethiopia are facing food shortages due to lack of rain for 2 seasons in a row. We'll have these stories and more right here on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the International Organization for Migration says efforts continue to rescue around 200 migrants from Somalia and Ethiopia who have been kidnapped in Libya. They're being held for ransom. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
News of the kidnappings and illegal detentions in Libya first surfaced in a video which appeared on Facebook on June 9th. The International Organization for Migration says families of the missing men and women have received ransom demands based on short video clips depicting scenes of active torture. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA the source of the video is not known, but there is little doubt as to its veracity. He says the scenes of people dozens to a room are graphic.
We understand that there are cases of people being tortured with cement blocks, I think put on their chest or put on their back. There are limbs broken, there are scars. In cases of slack, listless men who appear to be emaciated, the witnesses themselves complain about having not been fed for quite some time.
Millman says the criminal gangs demand that families pay ransoms of $8,000 or more for the release of their loved ones. He says the families sell their livestock and other assets to meet these demands. Millman says there is nothing new about the slaving industry, saying it has been around throughout history. What is new, he says, is the ready availability of digital devices and of high-speed communication, even to some of the poorest villages in the world.
It gives criminals an opportunity to profit from the digital age. There's no question that it's true that you can terrify a mother and father with a tweet or with an email or with a video you download onto a telephone in seconds. That kind of thing wasn't possible a generation ago, and it's probably going to get worse.
The IOM reports it is working with partners to try to locate the migrants. It says IOM staff, in coordination with authorities in Libya, is trying to trace and potentially aid in the rescue of these victims. The politically unstable country is a transit point for migrants seeking to head to Europe. The lack of a stable government makes them vulnerable to abuse and exploitation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. More than 77,000 migrants have entered Europe by sea this year. The vast majority have gone to Italy, followed by Greece, Spain, and Cyprus. More than 1,800 people have died trying to make the journey. In recent years, a steadily growing number of migrants have been children who are not accompanied by an adult. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Well, there is a great deal of concern because we've had 70,000 unaccompanied minors land in Italy since 2011. And Save the Children is very concerned that they're becoming younger and even more vulnerable. We had 25,000 young minor migrants arrive last year, and that's becoming a more difficult situation in Italy also because the borders have been tightened up. So these children are being trapped here, and once they arrive, there's concern that they're risking their lives as they try to take roads or railway lines. particularly on the French border or on the border of Austria, to try and move into other countries. And so their personal safety is an issue. The government here is also concerned that they don't have enough protection and supervision once they do arrive.
When these kids arrive, I imagine they're looked at, taken care of a bit, given some food, medical checkup. And then where do they go? I mean, you're saying they're off to try to cross the border.
There's concern that the migrant welcome centres here in Italy do not cater adequately for minors and offer them enough protection. In some cases, children are assigned to foster families, but in many cases, they don't have a structure, they don't have supervision, they are vulnerable to exploitation, and they don't have adequate protection. And that is a concern of the government. Now, Save the Children has also called for the rapid implementation of an Italian law that was passed in March. Now, this sets out precise procedures to verify new arrivals, their age, and also to ensure that they have guardians and placements with families, and also guarantee that they have access to healthcare and education. So at the moment, it's a very loose system with all sorts of inconsistencies, and children are really vulnerable to exploitation. And in many cases, authorities don't know what becomes of them. Where do they go, and what becomes of them once they land here and go through that initial processing?
Do we know how many, if any, manage to cross the border either into France or Switzerland?
Well, it's something that's not very well documented. We know that there is concern about the influx of migrants that we've seen in Italy just since the beginning of June. 20,000 of 160,000 refugees who have landed in Europe have been relocated. But in terms of the young children, it's difficult to know what happens to them. We know that, for example, between 2011 and 2016, we had arrivals of young children from Eritrea, Egypt, Gambia, and Somalia primarily. And most of them seem to be 16 or 17 years old, but the number under 15 has been rising, and so that's also of great concern.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. In Lesotho, Thomas Tabane was sworn in today as the country's new prime minister. The ceremony comes 2 days after his estranged wife was shot dead and 3 years after he fled the country fearing he might be assassinated. The AP reports his supporters believe the fatal attack on his estranged wife was an attempt to undermine his government. Tabane's Al-Basotho Convention Party scored a major victory in the June 3rd elections. Nevertheless, there are concerns about military interference. Amnesty International is calling on Tabane to address human rights abuses in the country. A former UN Secretary General and 9 former African presidents have warned the Democratic Republic of Congo is in grave danger. Reuters reports Kofi Annan and the former leaders issued a statement because DRC officials have failed to hold an election to replace President Joseph Kabila. Kabila refused to step down after his term ended last December, but an agreement was reached with the opposition to set a date for a vote this year. However, that has not happened, and it's not likely it will. There are delays in registering voters and getting the funding needed to hold the election. The political turmoil triggered many violent protests last year in which dozens of people were killed. The UN says the GOO rainy season in Somalia did bring some relief from the drought in parts of the country. However, the season now appears to be over, and there's a warning the rains have created some unsafe water sources. Humanitarian officials say that could lead to more causes of acute watery diarrhea and cholera. Currently, more than 51,000 cases of the two diseases are reported in Somalia. Overall, 6.7 million people need assistance, but more than 3 million of them face crisis conditions that are bringing them closer to famine. Since last November, nearly 740,000 people have been displaced by drought in Somalia. Also in southern Ethiopia, millions of people are facing food shortages due to lack of rain for two rainy seasons in a row. The international organization Save the Children warns food supplies are already on the brink of depletion with a shortfall in funding. Across the country, at least 7.8 million people, including 4 million children, have been hit by drought. They are struggling to get enough food and water to feed themselves and their livestock. In addition, a lack of funding has left 700,000 people without expected international aid. They face the same prospect this month and next month if funding continues to dry up. Charlie Mason is the humanitarian director for Save the Children in Ethiopia. He describes how the drought has impacted the lives and livelihoods of people in southern Ethiopia.
Southern Ethiopia has been struck by a series of droughts. Many droughts have long roots, and this one is no exception. So in fact, the spring rain, or the Gu rain, last year performed quite badly in the southern areas, mainly in Somali region, but all across the south of Ethiopia. So that laid a foundation, if you like, for drought and food insecurity. In itself, it didn't cause a major problem, but everybody in Ethiopia was very much looking forward to the November rain of last year to help alleviate the situation. It was forecast in the middle of last year that the November, the Dare rains of 2016, were going to fail or perform very badly. And indeed they did. The rain was far below average and insufficient to regenerate water sources or to regenerate pasture for the animals to graze on. And in fact, it plunged the southern part of the country into a very serious drought. So two consecutive failed rain seasons are enough to declare drought. And many thousands of animals were lost. So the people across that area depend very heavily on livestock, on cattle, goats, and camels for their own livelihood. That is their job. They are farmers and herders of livestock. Losing animals in that number put tens of thousands of people, if you like, out of work. So put them into a situation of no income and no food security for themselves.
In the short term, then, what is being done now to really help people, especially since they have lost their livelihoods?
Since the failure of the Dare rains at the end of last year, there's been a huge response in Ethiopia. It is being led by the government of Ethiopia and by the Somali regional government and the other regional governments of areas affected. And it's supported by the UN system, United Nations, and then different charities like Save the Children and other NGOs. So what's being done so far has been a huge food aid operation. So 1.7 million people just in Somali region, the southeastern part of Ethiopia, have been receiving emergency food aid support. NGOs like Save the Children have also been strengthening the health and nutrition system so that children who do become malnourished can be treated at health centers and restored to good health. Both the government and the NGOs have been distributing fodder for animals, critically to try to keep animals alive so that when the rains do come back, there are animals that people can breed from and restart their livelihoods.
What has the U.S. been doing as well in this situation?
The United States government specifically has stepped up very early in Ethiopia and provided early response at the end of 2016. And that response is part of a long-standing partnership with the Ethiopian government and the humanitarian community in Ethiopia to make sure that emergency responses are timely and effective and save lives. We are all, however, challenged by the latest rains failure and having to extend the response for another 6 months. We call on the international community to do just that, to step up again and make sure food aid pipeline does not break and that water trucking gets out where it's needed and that people are safely supported through the next 6 months of this drought.
That was Charlie Mason, the humanitarian director for Save the Children in Ethiopia. In Cameroon's far north, a female suicide bomber blew herself up last night, killing two civilians. AFP reports the area is frequently targeted by Boko Haram militants from Nigeria. The latest attack occurred in the town of Lomami on the Nigerian border. Sources say the bomb went off behind this town's public school. 10 people were killed in the same region earlier this month in other suicide bombings. The Boko Haram attacks have caused about 200,000 people in Cameroon's far north to flee their homes. Also in Cameroon, the case of a bishop found dead earlier this month has sparked calls for a wider investigation into what Catholic authorities in the country say has been a string of suspicious clergy deaths. Two other priests have been found dead in the past month. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Worshippers at a Catholic church in Oven, on the outskirts of Yaoundé, held a memorial service for Jean-Marie Benoit Bala. Oven is Bishop Bala's birthplace. Among the mourners is Marc Joseph Ongba, the late bishop's uncle.
On peut dire que le ciel nous est tombé sur la tête.
He says they shall continue to mourn Bishop Bala until they are told what happened to him. He says they are devastated by his death. The 59-year-old bishop disappeared from his residence in Bafia, central Cameroon, on May 31st. His car was found the next day, 60 kilometers away on the bridge over the Sanaga River. A note found in the car said, "Je suis dans l'eau," I am in the water. The case was initially reported as a suicide. However, fishermen discovered Bala's body 3 days later, and the government ordered an investigation stating that a criminal hand was suspected. The Episcopal Conference of Cameroon Bishops now says Bala was murdered. Reverend Jarvis Kibeikewi read the declaration.
We recall with sadness the murder of several other prelates, members of the clergy, and consecrated persons whose assassination under similar circumstances has never been explained up to this day. We strongly feel that the clergy in Cameroon are particularly persecuted by some obscure and devilish forces.
Two other priests have died in the past month. Father Amel Jama, rector of the Minor Seminary in Bala's own diocese, and a priest in southwestern Cameroon, Augustine Nzi, were found dead in their rooms. The Episcopal Conference says the priests had recently spoken out on controversial issues like corruption and public health. When reached by VOA, police in the central region of Cameroon declined to comment on the investigations. For some, the recent events have recalled a string of mysterious clergy deaths in Cameroon from 1988 to 1991, during which one bishop, six priests, and three nuns were all found dead. The results of those investigations were not made public. The recent cases are being followed keenly in the capital. Yaoundé resident Benin Bumagana.
We are all worried. We are all troubled. Why are the bishops being killed?
The National Communication Council has instructed reporters not to publish editorials on the deaths until investigations are complete. But the story continues to make headlines in the local press. Yaoundé resident Christophe Mbappé says the government should make sure results of the investigations are published to stop the suspicion that has been going on for a very long time. However, Claude Njomo Bikun, a barrister of the Cameroon Bar Council, says the law does not compel prosecutors to present their findings.
Le temps de la justice n'est pas le temps du public. He
says public opinion does not determine how, why, when, and the pace courts or commissions set up to investigate cases should work. He says all judicial inquiries should be carried out in total serenity without external influences. Authorities have not given a timeline for the investigations. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
25 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, family members who live with someone with tuberculosis may be shielded against the highly infectious disease by taking vitamin A. As VOA's Jessica Berman reports, a new study finds that many of those who develop TB are deficient in the nutrient.
In a study in Lima, Peru, researchers found that adults whose diets were deficient in vitamin A had a tenfold increased risk of developing TB from an infected family member. The risk was 20 times higher in young people ages 10 to 19. Vitamin A deficiency is reportedly common among some 30% of the world's population in mostly low and middle-income countries. Megan Murray of Harvard Medical School's Department of Global Health and Social Medicine says investigators followed 6,000 participants who lived with someone with TB for 1 year. All agreed to have their blood drawn at the start of the study. Over the course of the investigation, Murray, a co-researcher, says 192 people became sick. Their blood samples, taken at the beginning of the study, were then compared with those of other close family members who did not develop TB.
And then we took the people who had got disease and went back and looked at their blood samples from the beginning of the study. And in those blood samples, people who had gotten TB were much more likely to have been vitamin A deficient or to be in the lower two quartiles of vitamin A level. So not even technically vitamin A deficient, but just lower than people who didn't get TB. And we were really surprised by that result because it wasn't something that we were expecting or even looking for.
The findings were published in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. More than 1.8 million people worldwide died of the lung disease in 2015. One-third of the global population is infected with the tuberculosis bacterium, but most will never become ill. Vitamin A deficiency can cause vision problems, so Murray says children are often given a supplement at birth. She says scientific research has shown that vitamin A, or retinol, may modulate the immune system and help ward off diseases like TB. Murray, however, was careful to stress her study did not establish a cause-and-effect relationship between vitamin A deficiency and the development of tuberculosis. Murray was asked whether it might be possible to shield close family members from tuberculosis by giving them vitamin A supplements if they're found to be deficient.
The effect was so strong and, was, as I say, was so unexpected that it does raise that question.
Murray says the next step is to study whether adding vitamin A to antibiotics given to family members of a loved one with TB would offer an additional layer of protection. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.